I'm with activist and writer, music critic, Dror Varshavsky, here in Montreal. And today we're going to be having a discussion about a celebrated French comic artist, a political cartoonist named Séné, or Maurice Séné, who passed away in early May. This was a celebrated artist dating over many decades, dating back to the 1960s, where this artist, Séné, founded a journal called Séné Massacre, a critique to French colonialism. At different times was working with Charlie Hebdo. And I wanted to speak with Dror Varshavsky today because they were friends, and recently Dror penned an article about Séné's life shortly after he passed away for the Comics Journal. So that's based in the U.S., I think primarily in New York City. Good day, Dror. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk about Séné in English. Not enough people know him in outside of France.
Well, let's start there. I mean, this was a friend of yours, but also someone with pretty profound roots in the French left, addressed many topics through these political cartoons. If you could just maybe start by giving us a bit of a picture of who Séné was and some of the, from your point of view, some of the important issues and practices that he carried out in his life.
Yeah, before becoming a friend, I was an admirer of Séné. Séné was somebody who educated me politically. I mean, I'm 50 years younger than he was, so I grew up watching and reading Séné's cartoons. Some of them were even drawn before I was born, but he made so eloquent, I mean, funny, of course, but incisive very powerful cartoons during mostly, as you were saying, the 60s and the 70s. I guess one thing that was new in this type of comics activity is that he was very criticizing France. So he was a French person, really very typical French, rooted in the French education, but he was very against the French politics, the French governments, the French activities, colonial activities. So sure. He drew a lot against General de Gaulle, who at the time was president in France. And at the time, censorship was pretty strong. So almost every couple of cartoons he made, one of them was censored, or the books were forbidden, or the newspaper were closed down. So de Gaulle, both domestic, the way he was dealing with the student rebellion in 68, but also, as you said, the colonial France in Algeria. I think probably one of the first fights that he got into was the liberation war of Algerians. He immediately sided with the Algerians, which was not very popular at the time. He was and he used his talent because before that he used to make like funny little cartoons that were not particularly political, but when he had the opportunity, he started to put his efforts into denouncing France and supporting the Algerians.
This is in the early 60s.
Until the end of the war in Algeria in 62, so late 50s and mostly early 60s. And from then on, I mean, it continued mostly with, not mostly, but a lot of his more powerful cartoons were around international issues, all those liberation struggles, whether in Cuba, or blacks, African Americans in the U.S., and of course other French colonies. And then came May 68, May 68, the student rebellion in Paris. And he, at the time, was not that young anymore. He was already turning 40. Oh. But he immediately joined the streets and participated in the demonstration, created a new journal on the spot that never made any money, of course, but started to freely give away his newspaper. At the time, that was called L'Enragé. That also quickly got censored and forbidden. And where a lot of young cartoonists started, and some of them became famous later in Charlie Hebdo, like Volinsky, Cabu, and others. So he's because of that, he's, I mean, from many perspectives, the father of a generation of cartoonists and cartoon in general in France.
Oh, really?
So that's why it was such a sad event in France, because with him goes a generation of a way of using cartoon to be really radical and not just, you know, funny, and then you forget about it. You can really convey messages that are pretty strong, and that's what he showed.
I did want to just visit quickly this period of time during the militarized French colonial repression in Algeria. Today, I mean, we have a situation where the French government has essentially, you know, apologized for some of the violence that took place. I mean, there was many massacres, profound violence. But at the time, from what I understand, even a lot of the French left was not that vocal in terms of supporting the Algerian liberation struggle. So I'm just wondering if you could contextualize a little bit more, and also maybe just share a bit about that period of French history, which people might not be that familiar about, in terms of what that looked like on the ground in France in regards to solidarity with the Algerian struggle.
It's interesting because it reminds me of a couple of anecdotes with Siné that tells a lot about exactly the question you're asking. When he was contacted by people who asked if he agreed to be in solidarity with the Algerians, he said, no, I want to be part of the struggle. I just don't want to just be in solidarity. I want to join the FLN and I want to help from within whatever I could do.
The Front de Libération Nationale,
so the Liberation Army in some sort of in Algeria, but also in France. And there were a lot of Algerian workers. And so one thing he did, for example, well, first of all, he hid people at home, like people who needed to be hidden, like activists, militants. He forged papers because he was very good with drawing. And he had a formal training in drawing, so he knew how to do a lot of things that was required if he wanted to forge a fake passport, for example.
So this is pre-digital, of course.
Pre-digital. So he did a lot of that. And I think he smuggled weapons when necessary. And he did that, by the way, through all of his life, not smuggling weapons, but hiding people. He hid people from the Basque Revolution later in the 70s. I mean, when he thought one person was in danger and was searched after by the police, he said, I don't need to know more. He's my ally no matter what. And if he needs a place to hide, he's welcome to come to my place. And so many people came to his place. Some he didn't even know who they were. He just hid them. So with the Algerian struggle, there's one interesting anecdote. He was member or close to a network of people called the Réseau Janson, who actually hid people and smuggled weapons and tried to help the Liberation Army. And at some point, they issued a petition, I think, demanding the liberation of one of, I think, of Janson himself, who was caught. And they had to go to leftist figures and intellectuals to ask if they would sign this petition. And he decided to add Jean-Paul Sartre's name, and he forged Jean-Paul Sartre's signature, because he thought, if I go and I ask him, it's going to be hours of discussion. Maybe he will agree, maybe not. Maybe he will want to change the text. Fuck it, I'll just forge his name, and he will never dare denying that he signed it. And it worked. So as you were saying, the left was, in all the contradiction of after the war, I mean, of course, they were, you know, the colonization is bad, but on the other hand, Algeria, you know, they were used to it. It was been 100 years that Algeria is, quote, unquote, French. So some people, I guess, had the trouble of getting past this period. So, and again, Siné was allowed to write about it in a semi-major at the time magazine called L'Express, a weekly magazine. And they let him draw whatever he wanted and write, but it didn't last very long. It lasted a couple of months, and then there were more and more readers that sent letters saying how offended they were by Siné's. And so they ended up censoring him, and he left, and that's why he had to create his own magazine.
So let's just look at this in a broader sense from this period you're talking about until today. You mentioned the importance of political cartoons in France, and of course, Siné played a huge role as an artist within that political cartoon movement. That tradition is not only in France, of course, but in other societies around the world. But French political cartoons have a particular character. So I'm just wondering if you could talk a bit about it from a sociological perspective, in the sense of like Séné's role as an artist in manifesting this whole framework of the political cartoon, and specifically in the cultural context of France, where the political cartoon does play a role in terms of bringing up critiques, but you know, we're talking about this period of time, but I know that his work, of course, extended through the 70s and the 80s, critiques of France-Afrique, but then there's also stylistically, I can see he had a big influence on an artistic front.
It's a wide type of question, but it's interesting. Sure. And it is interesting to see that he kept pushing this idea and maybe asking those questions up until today and up until his death, and hopefully maybe it will last after his death, because he founded a new magazine called Ciné Mensuel, a monthly paper, in which he wanted to defend the same ideas. And in that respect, he's also kind of a father figure, because as opposed to many people in general, activists sometimes, and cartoonist in particular, and I'm thinking of some of them in Charlie Hebdo, a lot of them tamed down their insight in their cartoons, and he never did. He kept fighting, he kept being really critic. He would never bow to power. He never accepted any honor, as opposed to some in Charlie Hebdo that got the Légion d'honneur. He would spit on that with no hesitation.
National.
Yeah, kind of a medal, gold medal of the government. And so I'd say more maybe than, even though if you want to see a continuum in his fights, I mean, up until recently, he would still criticize France's colonialism action. Sure, Algeria war is over, but France's action in Mali up until today resembles what they always used to do, the France-Afrique, and he kept being appalled and scandalized, and would use his anger and his talent to denounce it. But I guess another way to maybe express himself, which is not only artistically, but more generally in terms of artist expression, freedom of expression, the way he dealt with his magazine was basically he gathered people that he believed in, the fact that they were they had good ideas and they were talentous, and then he would give them a wild card, like free, like each artist would get one page, sometimes two pages, in a journal, and they'd write whatever they want.
Sure.
And no censorship whatsoever. I mean, at some point they had a little bit of hesitation because they were afraid of being sued, but they would always discuss with the artist, saying, okay, this will give us a trial. Sometimes it's okay, we can take the chance, it's worth it. Sometimes maybe you should change one thing and then we avoid a trial and it remains powerful. But it was always a discussion, never censorship.
But it's very interesting because, I mean, one of the French official discourses is liberté d'expression.
Of course, that's the irony. I mean, since the Charlie Hebdo shooting, that was supposed to be shooting against liberté d'expression, the liberté, freedom of speech, has never been so under attack by the French authorities, and not so much elsewhere. So I think
that's a tendency that goes back decades too. There's many other examples.
Yeah, probably, but it's more striking. Now with the état d'urgence, the state of emergency, there's so many laws that allow the state to just shut down. So it's ironic. But so I guess this anarchist view of dealing with a newspaper, but where everybody's free, as long as you're with us, you're free, you do whatever you want, is something that was, I think, prominent and major in the way he did it.
So, I mean, we could talk a long time about Séné's work. We're talking with Gerard Warshawski, who's living in Montreal right now, but from Paris, who was a friend of Maurice Séné, who's a celebrated radical French cartoonist, Séné, who passed away in early May. One of the journals that Séné collaborated with was, of course, Charlie Hebdo, which he, from what you've shared in your article, called A World Without Séné, One of the journals he joined was the Charlie Hebdo journal, right after the U.S. Bombing and invasion of Iraq, the first Gulf War. So I'm wondering if you could just talk a bit about his role in that journal, because of course Charlie Hebdo now, from this this sort of French political cartoon world, has become very known, but maybe this is a bit of insight into the complexities of that process.
Yeah, it is a complicated process. So Siné joined the second Charlie Hebdo newspaper, so that was in 91, before the first edition of Charlie Hebdo was in the 70s mostly, and ended up in 81. So after 10 years of disappearing, it was reborn in 91. Siné joined it on the ground that it would be more political than when the first one was, and also on the ground that, a little bit like he did, he had free zone. It was called La Zone de Ciné. He had a half a page where he could draw whatever he wanted. And so he was free, and also because he was famous enough not to be fired, at least, and not until, for the first 15 years, and then he eventually got fired himself. But the head, the guy who was running the newspaper, Philippe Val, at the beginning couldn't do much against this famous cartoonist in history that Ciné was. So I guess it's a long evolution, but at first in Charlie Hebdo, there were several topics on which everybody agreed, and some topics on which some either journalist or cartoonist had diverging opinions, but everybody was allowed to express their opinion. So as a reader, I remember that it was kind of fun to read this journal, because sometimes you hated page one, you loved page two, then you were disagreed with page three, you were convinced by page four. Page five, which was Ciné's page, was like fun because it was like radical and funny and incisive and ironic. And as long as all those expressions in good faith were siding one to another, and also they didn't go overboard as they did later with the Islamophobia that became their trademark, it was fun even to read articles that you didn't agree with. But little by little, Philippe Val, the head of the journal, started to want a one-sided journal. So he started to fire a couple of people, the young people that were not didn't have the same opinions as him. And in the end, it's kind of ironic, because the only two people that opposed him in a journal were Ciné and Charb. And then he fired Ciné. And then, not long after, he quit himself, and Charb became the head of the journal. But because Charb, when Ciné got fired, didn't defend Ciné, Ciné was not ready to forgive him, so he didn't go back. But in a way, Charb was not the worst. He was one of those who had more radical positions, anti-colonial, pro-Palestinian, and also very critical of the way Europe was going in a very neoliberal way, critical of the blind alliance with the U.S. that Philippe Val was defending. And so, yeah, as you say, it was complex. I mean, there were several ideas, but I guess the center point that created the issue was Islamophobia. And I'm not going to even try to pretend that Ciné was the most, that was not his major issue. He didn't really care. He didn't participate in the Islamophobia of Charlie Hebdo, but he also didn't oppose it very strongly. I guess he didn't see it as being central. For him, it was just one thing he disagreed with. But again, in the idea of freedom of speech within Charlie Hebdo, if some people wanted to be Islamophobic, he didn't care. But that was clearly what created the major problem in Charlie Hebdo. And actually, when Ciné did his own journal, Ciné Mensuel, he made careful that there was no Islamophobia in even though, I mean, as people in Charlie Hebdo, atheism and the fight against all religion is a constant in Ciné's life and Ciné's struggles. But of course, when you're against all religions in France, the major religion you're fighting is Christianity. And even
Catholicism.
And even that's less strong as it was in the 60s, where religion and church had a lot of power in French daily and political power, but today not so much, so it's kind of ridicule to put so much effort in it.
I bring this up also because the shorthand of Charlie Hebdo at the time of the shooting last year?
Last year.
Wow. Is that this was a left French political journal with anarchist leanings, but you point to a much more complicated picture.
It is complicated. A leftist newspaper or magazine. As I once wrote, it could have racist and anti-racist articles side by side in the same journal. They were strongly and passionately anti-racist, but they sometimes didn't notice that some other cartoon they will write or some articles they write is racist.
Because there's a lot of colonial mentality that hadn't been processed by some of the contributors.
Something like that, exactly. Yeah. This is probably the process. And yeah, I guess I'm not trying to defend them, but in a way, that's the difficulty between the first and the second Charlie Hebdo. Some of them are just cartoonists; they're not, you know, political science scholars, and they sometimes go for the most efficient joke first, even though the political message is maybe not the best thought one.
Sure. So Sine eventually did create his old. Excuse me, he did create his own journal called Ciné Mensuel, which you were part of as a music writer. So maybe could you share with us a bit about that and your experience working with him?
Yeah, so actually after he got kicked out of Charlie Hebdo, so which was a weekly paper, he tried to do a Ciné Hebdo, which was also a weekly paper, and that's the one I participated in during the musical column. And that's also when he realized, which was not so obvious, that he was very popular. Because when he got kicked out, there were some articles. Also, I didn't mention it, but I think it's fair to say that he was kicked out of Charlie Hebdo on accusation of antisemitism. Because he made a joke on Sarkozy's son, who married a multimillionaire, and he made a joke on the fact that he converted to Judaism to marry this multimillionaire because she's a Jew, and it was interpreted as an anti-Semite comment, which is ironic because actually he was just quoting a friend of the family of Sarkozy. And anyway, he contested this accusation and won the case in the French judicial system. And Charlie Hebdo had to pay him a lot of money to compensate. And if he wanted, they even had to have him back. But he, of course, refused. So this was a mundane excuse. And anyway, it was pretext to kick him out because Philippe Val wanted him out. But when he got kicked out and when he's slain with this accusation of antisemitism, and articles in newspapers only defended the official version, which was he was an antisemite, it was really hard for him. And he thought, you know, his life was over, his career was over. And he gathered friends around him, and he, little by little, got a lot of support. A lot of support from friends, a lot of people, a lot of support from some intellectuals, but also that's exactly when he realized, and we all realized, that he got a lot of support from artists, cartoonists, stand-up comedians, that all paid respect, paid tribute to Ciné, who kind of liberated this freedom of speech, this freedom to satire, freedom to attack the political powers. And if he hadn't done that, all those very popular stand-up comedians or cartoonists would never have had the chance of doing what they did. So they all sided with him, and when he decided to make a new newspaper, they all came in, they all joined. The first couple of editions we worked for free, but then they even started making money, so they started paying. So the first couple of papers sold hundreds of thousands, which was a beautiful reward and heartwarming message. But then, you know, cartoon journals in France, and Charlie Hebdo knows that, is dying off. I mean, not that many people buy newspapers anymore, and cartoons, newspaper are expensive to make. So after almost 2 years, a little over 1.5 years, the paper had to close down, Charlie Hebdo, and they decided to change it into Ciné Mensuel, so a monthly edition that is still still going now. They only sell...
The paper had to close down, which was Ciné...
Hebdo, and was turned into Ciné Mensuel. Yeah. And so now it's been 4 years, and it's cheaper to have a monthly paper. They sell 30,000 a month, and that's enough to survive and to pay the contributors, but the weekly paper was not enough.
And that's still going.
And that's still going, yeah. Okay. There was even one edition after Ciné passed away, the June edition, mm-hmm. and there's going to be a summer one coming out this week, this Wednesday.
So the last thing I would ask you about is just a bit more personal. I mean, you mentioned this context and this history. You're a Jewish-French activist who's worked a lot on Palestine, on many other social justice issues, but of course somebody who I know also as a music lover. You mentioned writing a music column for Ciné's project. Just also somebody who knows Paris very well. I visited you there quite a few times. I'm just wondering if you could just offer some reflections personally about Ciné, this sort of role of like a public intellectual artist in France who is sort of outside of the institution but is part of a very... important tradition of people like that, utilizing a mixing of art, of politics, of political critique. I'm just wondering if you have any reflections on that in a broader sense, but also just anything you'd like to share about this person who passed away in early May.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, and it leaves me the opportunity to talk about another aspect of Ciné that first was known only from close friends, but then little by little got to be known by a lot of people, and that's also what made Ciné popular and loved by so many people, because at first all we knew of Ciné was this very angry person that was angry against police brutality, colonialism, racism, authority of the church, and he was always, this angry cartoonist, funny, but enraged, and it took a little more time to learn that this guy was also a passionate lover, somebody who loved music. And that's if I go back to how we met, Ciné and I, it was around music. It was around, we went without knowing one another, we both went to a jazz festival in New Orleans in 1995. And he wrote articles about it, and then I wrote him back saying, wow, according to the articles you wrote, we were in the same room at the same day. It's too bad we didn't meet. And then he invited me to his place, and that's how we met. He was a jazz lover, gospel lover, salsa lover. He knew, and when I say love, I mean, of course, he enjoyed it very much, but he was also very, very knowledgeable about it. He had a huge collection of records of jazz, African music, soul, salsa, also flamenco, and was very curious. I mean, that's why when he had his own Ciné Hebdo magazine, I mean, I immediately asked if I could do the music column, because, I mean, and Charlie Hebdo doesn't have a music column, and I thought if Ciné has a magazine, it has to have a music column. And he was very happy about it, and he sometimes contributed ideas or cartoons or comments. And I interviewed him once to tell us his stories of concerts he went to in the 60s. So I guess if you want to have the cliche of French tradition, he was also a food lover, but that's less maybe easy to share. And of course, wine. He kept talking about he liked Morgon, that's one specific wine, which is not even a very expensive wine. He kind of despised people who would spend hundreds of euros on a bottle of wine. As long as the wine was good and you had friends around, that was good enough. But so... And people who got to know him through the journal, and he expressed his own feelings and passions, not only his anger but also what he loved, and it also helped making it a character that people really liked. And I think it was also obvious when he died, and when you see the funerals gathered a lot of people. Of course, there was music at his funeral, and. He became a popular figure even among young people, because his biggest fame is the 60s, but he managed to renew his fans by just being himself, by just being this passionate, guy that with a lot of integrity, which would hate the police as much as he would love John Coltrane or whatever. And I think this complexity and but also this and untiredness of him, both in loving and in hate, made him special and respected, I think, for this reason. Yeah.
Thanks, Gerard Warshawski.
Well, thank you for again. I really appreciated talking about him again. It's been a month and a half. It's been almost 2 months now that he died. But you know, with what's happening now, I'm wondering what kind of cartoons he would have made on the Brexit, or it would probably have been really funny, really incisive. And anyway, we have to live without him now.
Yeah. We've been speaking with Gerard Warshawski, who is a an activist, a music critic, who's from Paris, but is living in Montreal, also a scientist. He was friends with Ciné, or Maurice Ciné, a celebrated French political cartoonist, who just passed away in his 80s, actually, in early May. This is an important figure in French political cartoon history. Thanks for listening.